Welcome to the Lab Up Leaders series, a showcase of global change agents and experts in healthcare and laboratory management. Here's your host, Lab Up Global Founder, Robert Farias.
Welcome, everyone. We'd like to welcome you to the Lab Up Global Leaders podcast. Our guest today is George Nnenenzelu. George, how are you doing?
I'm all right. And you?
Good. Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having
George, me. Thank you. George, can you please introduce yourself to the audience with a bit of your academic background, please?
Yes. Thanks for this opportunity. My name is George Nnenenzelu. I'm currently an assistant professor at the Montreal Heart Institute and the University of Montreal. I got my medical degree from the Latin American School of Medicine in Havana, Cuba, and then did my PhD at the National University of Singapore. And I spent some years there as a research fellow before becoming an assistant professor right now.
And so can you talk to us in terms of your background? So you're not from Cuba originally.
No.
So can you give us some of the backstory on how you ended up in Cuba? And
right.
What was your trajectory prior to that, please?
Yeah. So I'm a Nigerian by birth, and I got a scholarship to study medicine. There was a scholarship offered by Fidel Castro back then to the school is called Latin American School of Medicine. It was initially meant for Latin American countries, but it was extended to African countries, and I think now to many other countries. And so I got a scholarship along with 99 other Nigerians in 2000. To study medicine in Cuba, and that's how I ended up in Cuba. Then after, yep.
And your journey to Singapore from Cuba, how did that take place?
Yes, so after my studies in Cuba, I, while most of my colleagues were looking into medical specialties, I kind of was interested in doing some kind of research, particularly in genetics research. And while looking into options and places to do a research program, one of my cousins, who has been a very good mentor, suggested Singapore because, well, they have very good universities, very strong research philosophy and research centers. And so I applied and thankfully got in to do my PhD with a scholarship as well at the National University of Singapore. And yeah, and then continued in my research path to now.
And was there any particular focus of your research? I assume cardiovascular disease as you're at the Heart Institute now.
Well, actually for my PhD, it wasn't cardiovascular. It was mostly, it was biomedical engineering, biomedical science. So it was looking at 3D cell culture. I looked at how to grow cells, muscular cells, different cell types, but mainly muscular cells in 3D, and how to align them in culture. But then I was interested in cardiovascular genetics, especially. And so after my PhD, I applied and joined a lab that works on cardiovascular genetics and epigenetics, and that's how. So the first 4 years of my research training was just basic general research training in cell culture, 3D cell culture, basic molecular biology techniques. And then afterwards, I focused on cardiovascular.
Great. And so now you're at the University of Montreal's Institute of Cardiology. Sorry, I was about to say it in French as I know you happen to be in the same city as me. Yeah. So what's the specific area of focus that you're on at the moment?
So I work on cardiovascular genetics and epigenetics. So epigenetics, to put it broadly, are the studies of the ways that genetic information gets transferred without modifying the gene, the bases of. So we know that our DNA is made up of bases, nucleotides, A, C, G, T. I don't want to go into details. And well, you have the mutations that could affect the genes, but also you have things that could affect the expression of these genes without affecting the nucleotides themselves. So these are often chemical modifications like methylation or acetylation on the histones that affect the expression of the genes without affecting the underlying sequences, the nucleotide sequences underlying it. So that's broadly epigenetic. So to give an example, all the cells in your body have the same genetic material, but they all behave differently. So the cells in your liver are different from the cells in your heart, and they're different from the cells in your lungs, even though they contain the same material. And so what determines which genes are expressed in which cell types? It's partly epigenetics. Yeah. So it influences which genes are expressed without changing the underlying basis. So it switches on and off genes or modulates, fine-tunes how they're expressed and then the function of each cell.
Great. And thanks for that description, George. And so, from perspective of its application to cardiovascular disease, as you're looking at it, what's your specific focus at the moment?
Okay, so I'm looking broadly at something called non-coding genome. Again, some basic introduction. Oh, so if you stretch out your DNA, things about 2 meters long, oh, about 3 billion bases. And what happens is only a subsection of that actually codes for proteins, and proteins are the molecules that do a lot of the work that actually are carried out in your cells. But most of the DNA, about 98% of the DNA, is supposed to be called, used to be called junk DNA, because they used to do, or they were thought to do nothing. So this is the part called the non-coding DNA, because they don't code for any protein. But now we're realizing that this non-coding DNA, or non-coding genome, as I call it, they are involved in regulating the ones that are coding. So the non-coding regulates the coding, and they do it through various means, things like something called enhancers. So enhancers are stretches of your DNA that regulate, like the name is called, enhancers, they enhance expression of a gene. You have repressors, so they repress the genes. And you have non-coding RNA, they don't code for proteins or peptides, but they have other functions in identifying or in regulating which genes express. So I work on this in the heart to see how this non-coding DNA affects expression of the genes in the heart, the function of the heart, and how it relates to disease.
And so, just George, help us appreciate then the impact of research that's shown. So, the concept is that you're identifying the role and the impact played by these non-coding genomes for the eventual intent of saying perhaps you can regulate the expression of the coding genes differently
Yep.
by some intervention. Is that the idea?
Yes. So one interesting thing is that so with the advent of DNA sequencing, and it's now quite very affordable. I mean, not still very cheap, but compared to 20 years ago, it's much more affordable. So what happens is usually when you look at you have control cases, so healthy, so to speak, healthy people versus those who have diseases, and you sequence their DNA to see if there are things, changes in the DNA that are associated with this disease. More often than not, you find the mutations happening in the non-coding regions. So a region that is doesn't code for any protein, somehow mutations in these regions tend to always show up in certain disease types. And so we're trying to understand why that is. And so by looking at those non-coding, we're realizing that, again, like some of this non-coding, because they regulate the coding genes, when you have a mutation there, it affects the coding genes and then affects the disease phenotype. So I want to see if that's what we can target these areas for first for diagnostics, to stratify patients, and also hopefully for treatment for therapy in the future. So yeah, that's also help us understand how some diseases come about.
Great. That's really impressive, George. And so, can you talk to us about the type of work that's necessary to understand this? So you mentioned sequencing a bit earlier. Can you dive into that a little bit for us, please?
Yes. So sequencing is key. There are lots of there are different techniques that are often applied now. So one, the basic one is DNA sequencing. It's you extract, you get the cells of interest, in my case, the heart, extract the DNA, and then you sequence it. So literally the sequencing machines, like companies like Illumina,
I think they're the market leader. So literally just retell you it's AGCT and just tell you it's a whole bunch of just four letters. And then, but then it's up to the scientists, in this case, the bioinformaticians, to look at this and figure out which part of the your genome, which part of the DNA those segments belong to. So first you map to see to the genome. Now we have a reference genome based on the early sequences. So it's supposed to be our reference human genome. It's not always accurate, but well, let's call it reference. And then you try and map the sequence of individual A to that reference. And then if you see that, for example, in position 1,000,002, the reference is a cytosine is a C, but this patient has an adenosine is an A. And if you look at, let's say, all those who have heart failure, those who have, let's say, cardiomyopathy, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, so where the heart gets big, you find that all of them have, or most of them have an A in the position 1,000,002, even though the reference is supposed to be C. So that tells you that for some reason, having an A when it's supposed to be a C is linked to this disease. Now, then we have to figure out why is that? And so for that, you have to do other kinds of sequencing, for example, to understand is that region a regulatory region? Okay, I introduced the term regulatory region because, like I said, a lot of the non-coding part regulates. So we just call them broadly regulatory region. They could be regulating through enhancing, increasing, or repressing, reducing, or insulating the different forms of regulation. So to understand if those are regulatory regions, there are other experiments that one has to do. I won't dive into details, but these experiments tell you which regions in your genome are enhancers, which regions are suppressors, which regions are insulators, super enhancers, et cetera, possible elements. So these experiments help you to tell what kind of regulatory region that place is that has this mutation. And then other experiments will tell you which genes are linked to that regulatory region. And that way you can figure out what's happening.
Great. Well, thanks for that overview, George. It helps us get a basic understanding of not only just the epigenetic side, but also what your actual experiments entail. Can we transition this now for early careerists and current students in the field that see the potential in the molecular world and they hear about this type of research and they appreciate the impact that this kind of research can have? And they're interested in participating in this down the road. Would you have some advice for them of things they should prepare for, some topics or some techniques they should focus on as things to learn in the coming years as they prepare for that?
Well, so depending on the stage at which they are in, like if you're in undergrad, if you're a high school student, of course you should have interest in molecular biology work. If you can have do internships in labs that can expose you to these techniques to learn what it entails. Of course, read a lot. Sadly, especially for those of us from the African continent, the lack of funds means that the lack of funds and the fact that many of these publications are usually under some kind of subscription means you may not find it easily available to read. But thankfully, there are many journals that are now open access, so anybody can read. So read to see what's out there, get yourself attached to the internship in labs, to expose yourself to molecular biology techniques. And if you're really interested in science, then you can pursue some graduate degrees, master's, PhD, in the field of interest. There are many fields. The truth is, many of these techniques are the same. It's just applied to different fields. So whether I'm in cardiovascular or in cancer or neurology, we often use the very same techniques, which is applied to a different tissue of interest. So once you master those techniques, once you understand the principle behind those techniques, you can apply to any field of interest.
Great. Thank you for that, George. Just want to wrap up here by giving you a chance to acknowledge any mentors or supporters who helped you along the way, people who have made your career, made an easier path for your career, or have supported you when things were a little less simple.
Yes, well, it's a long list of people. Of course, first my parents, my family, for being supportive all through my journey, being there. I mentioned my cousin earlier. He was actually very instrumental in me going to Singapore and going to Cuba, actually. He's very supportive. And then also my PhD supervisors, my PhD mentors to my PhD and my postdoc. If I have to name names, so my postdoc mentor, Prof. Roger Fu, my PhD mentors include Prof. Henry Yu from National University of Singapore, as well as Liu Hualiang and Yi Ching To, who was, she was a postdoc then, but she was my mentor for my PhD. My cousin was Dutch doctor, my parents, my family, they have been very, very helpful along the way in guiding me and making me who I am today. So I thank them all.
We thank you, George, for sharing some time with us and giving us that insight into your work, and to and some advice as well for other people considering this type of work in the future. And we certainly look forward to hearing more from you in the future, and look forward to your results as well as they come out and potentially help a lot of people with cardiovascular disease. Thank you for your time, George. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
To make a suggestion of someone that would make a great guest or topic you would like to hear more about, please visit us at labop.org. That's labopp.org.